Oh, hello. Sorry. You just caught me in the middle of some what's-its. I've got all that cheesy dust between my teeth now. I'm gone. I'll just have a slip of water.
There you go. Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's us, the Failing Writers Podcast.
Hello.
We're back. How are you, chaps?
Good.
All right.
Good,
yes.
Good. Happy to be here.
Yes, nice. It's nice to be back, isn't it? It's nice to be back. Yeah. Just for those of you that don't know, Dave's been away on holiday.
Yeah.
So we've had a little break.
Sunburn and everything.
And now we're back.
Now I'm back. Skin peeling off. Ready to go.
Where did you get sunburned, Dave?
Cornwall. on my flank.
Oh, don't. You're using the wrong words, Dave. You're making me hungry. You're making it sound like you cook.
Yeah, a bit of just the sort of sirloin area. And bizarrely, my right flank and my left foot.
Right.
I must have just missed out.
Did you fall asleep in the sun?
No.
With a hanky on your head in the Union Jack swimming trunks.
I didn't.
In a deck chair.
What I really want to do is to be able to peel my foot, but keep a whole one. Like when a snake sheds its skin, just be able.
Sorry,
to
Debbie, you started your horror story already. Is this part of the horror story? Because
no, but my horror story was inspired by the holiday, so we'll get to that.
It's just a little story of being away with the family, locked in a small room with the family for a week. My God, that sounds horrific, Dave. Wow.
But before we get into that, let's rein it back in a bit. We have to ask the never-ending question. What have we been writing this week, John? What have you been up to?
Do you know what? It's mostly been task. So it has been the horror story that we've been tasked to do. And also, suddenly, Tom pointing out that the deadline for the poetry competition is this Saturday. so that kind of kicked me into gear for the poetry as well. So I've done my poem and I've done my horror. And that is
Well, hold on a minute. You said, when I said about the poem deadline, you went, oh, right, yeah, we'll miss
that. Yeah, you said, let's not do that then.
So I didn't bother doing anything now.
Well,
this is like that kid at school, isn't it? Who says, oh, no, the test cancelled.
No, nothing.
Don't worry about it. And then you get in there.
Okay, the test starts in 5 minutes. John!
Do you know what? I just thought I'd have a go. And honestly, it just flowed out of me in about five minutes. I'm not saying it's any good.
It's probably not, but that's not
it
the
just
point,
popped out, and I thought, well, I've done it, you know. It was very heartfelt. You know, Kate was telling us it's got to be something that is, you know, front and center in your life. And it was definitely that.
That's true.
So, just out it came.
Well, we look forward to seeing that when you win the competition then, John.
Judging from your reaction, neither of you have done anything.
I've done a tiny bit of tweaking. And I've been taking out some of the controversial bits out of my silly little sales book. But it would be pushing it to call the actual writing. I guess it is something, isn't it? It's not nothing.
It is something.
Yeah, well done, mate. And the horror story thing, which I was not looking forward to in the slightest. And I'm not entirely sure that I've written a horror story as such. it's kind of just a bit of a story.
Well, it's a weird genre, isn't it? Because it's sort of a vast genre, if you think about it.
Yeah, I suppose anything that scares you is horror, isn't it?
But kind of. It's not coherent, is it? Because you can split it into like hundreds of different subgenres as well. You know, there's like dark urban fantasy and suspense and paranormal and I don't know. But there's a lot of them anyway.
Yeah.
Gothic.
All that sort of stuff.
Etc.
How did you find it, John? How did you find writing it?
I quite like horror. I'm a bit of a scaredy cat, so I can get into it quite quickly. Whereas you were saying the other day, you're not really at all, are you? Don't you find it?
I find it very difficult to find it believable or tune into it and not just be able to go, well, that's just silly.
I think what I like...
That wouldn't
happen. As if the phone call would come from in the house. Come on! Why is she falling over when she's running? She shouldn't have fallen over there.
A lot of horror doesn't pass the, what I call the my mum test. So with a lot of things, I often hear my mum's voice going, well, that wouldn't happen. or something like that. And that's how I judge if anything's any good and hot.
Is that your mum's catchphrase?
Yeah, well, that wouldn't happen.
Genetic, then, is it?
Is that the difference, though, between, like, good horror and bad horror? Like, the bad horror, you look at it and you think, well, that's a bit silly. Whereas the good stuff, it might be sort of, it might still be, like, paranormal and a bit silly in the sense that there's no way it would happen. But there's something about it that keys into the sort of primal bit of your brain.
Yeah, yeah. I was doing a bit of reading around it, and that's definitely was something that was mentioned, was, you know, sort of things like spiders and sort of natural, uncontrollable natural disasters and things like that.
Or just things, like, you can't explain, right? Things you can't understand.
Kind of even the ghost sort of side things.
Yeah. As long as I think the good stuff is where it all fits in with the rules of that world, isn't it? It doesn't have to be something that could actually happen in real life, but as long as it's convincing for the world that's been set up.
I always think that's really weird. You know, when you're watching a film or something where it's where the rules of the world have been set out.
Yeah. Mm.
So I don't know, like X-Men or something like that, where, you know, anything can happen in a way. And then something happens, you think, oh, well, that wouldn't happen. And it just seems a ridiculous thing to say because literally anything can happen. But it doesn't fit in. That's not fair.
That character would never have said that.
Yeah, you can't.
But they can fly over the building quite
happily. Yeah, yeah, I'll accept that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But how does Spider-Man go to the toilet?
That age-old question. Mm.
But before we get into the horror thing, I actually have written something. Other than that, I've actually finished a draft of the Spooky War book, which is now called Remembrance Day. I've actually written the words "the end" at the end. I know there's a huge amount that I've got to do on it now, but I've actually finished a draft. Something.
I don't know what to say to that, Dave. I wasn't necessarily expecting that to happen.
No, I wasn't expecting that to happen.
That's a rather beautiful thing. I think cue firework effect. Wow, Dave, that's amazing.
So, thanks for doing that in a genuine sounding way, John. I was quite surprised that I got there.
Hey, I've got a question for you, Dave.
Go on.
How are you feeling about it?
Feeling quite emotional. I was at the time, because, like I said, I didn't think I would ever actually get to the end. And it was a constant battle of, I've just got to keep going, just keep plugging away, this is wrong. It was like, you know, going through some, just throwing bits out and just get stuff down there.
You were talking about the end being like the sort of the kind of main bit that you were trying to get to. That was where all the story
really
was in a way.
Like,
were you happy with writing the end?
I was, because I took, so throughout the whole thing, I've kind of had pages of the original in front of me to sort of work off. Mm. And then I've sort of had to make little changes along the way, which meant that by the end, it's massively different. So I just kind of went, right, I'm just going to forget everything that was written before, not have anything in front of me. I know where it's got to get
to. Sorry, Dad.
And I just sort of wrote it sort of like freehand, if you like. Just, right, I'm just going to plow on, not refer to anything else, and just write. Mm. Yeah, and it was a totally different experience to do that. Because everything else all the way through has been, you know, right, okay, I know I've got to get to this paragraph that I want to keep in there, so write something and then it leads up to that, and take a chunk of that and copy and paste that here. But this was just like totally bosh. And even when there were bits that I was quite clear that writing this means I've got to change something in chapter 2, I was like, just forget it, just go, just keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was really, it just sort of poured out in the end. It was great. And writing the words "the end" just felt really satisfying.
And Dave, at what point is your dad going to get to read it? Are you going to edit first?
Oh no, I'm going to edit it first. Yeah, I don't. It would be silly to give it to him now. My dad go, well, no, I don't like it. that would be quite difficult, wouldn't it? But I'm going to. It's got a lot of work. I'm going to edit it a little bit, and then I'm going to send it to you to have a look
at. Well, that's very exciting. There.
Look forward to it, mate.
Yeah, massive.
Well done, Davey.
And then in the same week, I got a rejection letter.
Oh yeah.
Remember the TV show that I mentioned that I applied for? Surprisingly, I haven't been chosen.
The long shot.
I haven't been chosen to enter the writers' room for the panel show about Black History. So that wasn't much of a shock.
But good on you for having a go.
Exactly. You got to try these things, haven't you?
You have, totally.
And then I finished reading a book as well. I've been very busy on holiday, I finished the book that you set me to read.
Oh, excellent.
Steve Kaplan's The Hidden Tools of Comedy.
Oh, can we have a review of that next week then, Dave?
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you a review of it because it's finished and it was good. So that's...
Oh, blimey.
We've got content for next week now as well. So, yeah, it's been a busy old time.
Fantastic.
Right, well, we should probably have... someone should probably write a funny little ditty about horror, like a scary thing.
Yeah, someone should.
And then we'll play that now. And then when it's finished, we'll...
seamlessly go into the horror. Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Well, should we do the link? When it comes back in, should we do a link saying, oh, that was... What a good song that was.
Yeah. Yeah? Okay.
All right, let's do that. I like the bit with the gospel choir in the middle, John. Why did you think about doing that? Because that must have been really tricky to do.
Yeah.
And those, so I have to do that
just
now,
just the change in time signatures
very tricky to do.
Throughout was but, really... that must have taken... ages, John.
But I thought Paul McCartney's little cameo at the end was good.
All right, stop now. Stop.
Yeah, good luck with making that.
So enjoy this, folks.
I was taking out the bins when I heard a funny sound. It was coming from within the bin and sounded fairly loud. So I opened up the lid and suddenly I frowned, because deep inside was hid a tiny creepy clown. Then he ran up my arm and sank his teeth in my face, and I cried like a baby, cause it hurt really, really bad. It was a horror, because it was horrible, not very nice, my bowels uncontrollable.
Well, John, I'd say that probably wasn't one of your best.
Oh, that was a good little ditty, wasn't
I've
it?
I've never heard anything like that.
How about that?
In my life. Yeah.
How about that?
Loved it. So, as the song said, here's some horror stories. Who wants to go first?
Well, shall I go first?
You go first, Tom, seeing as you didn't want to do it in the first place.
Well, just because mine's a bit longer than I meant. I don't know if mine's actually going to be the longest.
What are we talking? Over a page?
It's 70,000 words, so I'll probably do... I do like half this episode and then it's about 1,200 words. I was trying to get it down to 1,000.
Bloody hell! I don't like horror. I don't really want to do this one.
Wow, you went for it, man.
So it's called The Parting Gift.
Oh yeah, that's okay. Three words.
Hang on,
isn't it?
Yeah. So turn the lights out. Wait.
The Parting Gift. I still had a key for the front door, so I let myself in. It was funny to think that just a couple of weeks ago they were both still alive, and now they were gone forever. I was okay with it, though. I mean, I still felt as if Mum would come in from the garden, a well-used trowel in a gloved hand and a hair bunched up in a lopsided afterthought of a ponytail, or that Dad would pop up from his secret lair in the basement, demanding to know who had arrived without warning. It didn't matter who came in or what they had to say. Dad would appear from the basement, swear a bit and say something like, "Can't any bugger call ahead these days, or even better, just not bloody visit?" Then he'd be back down the stairs like a rabbit down a rabbit hole. The year before last, my last year of school before I went off to uni, I remember coming in bursting to tell Mum and Dad some pretty exciting news. That our stupid little town had finally become famous. It was on the map, the home of the Canterbury Lane Killer. So called because that's where the first two girls went missing, not more than half a mile from my school. It was kind of thrilling in a bit of a sick way. But Dad, being Dad, just appeared from the basement stairs, told me not to worry about it, shrugged his shoulders at the news and vanished underground to play with his model train set or whatever it was he had down there until his tea was ready. I actually knew one of the five girls that went missing. I was at school with her, Katie Waterson. They think she was the Canterbury Killer's last victim. I don't think the police knew why he stopped killing, but they never found a body. I know you're not meant to say this, but I was kind of glad. She was a right bitch to me all through school. She was one of the beautiful people and I was an easy target, I guess. I never fitted into all that shit. Stupid kids thinking that being the top dog at school meant anything at all in life. I suppose they figured it out for themselves when they left and got in the big wide world. I guess Katie did. Mum always just put up with Dad, just said he was an eccentric and a product of his upbringing. Always used to confuse me, that. When I was little, he never let me ask questions about Grandma and Grandad. It simply wasn't a topic for discussion. Until one day, out on a father-daughter hunting trip, we go at least six or seven times in the summer every year without fail. and I can remember the air heavy with the intoxicating irony smell of fresh death as he taught me to skin a deer. The luscious rip of sharp blade through sinew and still warm skin. I'd asked him an obscure question about his side of the family tree earlier, which I thought he'd just ignored, but he hadn't. Hours later, halfway through skinning the deer, he just stopped and told me the whole story, exactly what had happened to his parents and why he did it. I don't know whether he just needed to tell someone or whether it had to be me, but it kind of all made sense to me somehow. I should have been shocked, or I don't know, scared or something. But I just instinctively understood and promised not to tell another soul as long as I lived. Anyway, here I was, stood in my dead parents' house, and I had no idea what I was meant to do with all the stuff. The solicitor guy had told me that a lot of people take a few sentimental items and just do a house clearance auction on the rest. I mean, I liked the idea of the house clearance bit, that sounded straightforward. I was less sure about the idea of being sentimental, it's not really me. I guess I could finally take the chance to have a look in Dad's basement. Maybe there would be something for me in there. I knew where he kept the key. I'd seen him place it on top of the fridge 100 times when I'd lived there. I don't even know if he knew that I knew he kept it there, or if he cared. I sometimes think it was more to hide it from Mum. I think he trusted me not to go down there, and I never did. But now it was different. Someone had to clear it out, and I was the only one left. I slipped the key into the lock and opened the door. I reached for the pull cord, and the fluorescent lights buzzed on in the basement. I held the rail as I stepped down the narrow, wooded stairs into what looked like, well, I don't know really, just a room. There was an old sofa, a few nondescript pictures on the wall, and a small workbench in one corner with a few bits of hunting stuff and other tools on there. Not an Aladdin's cave of sentimental trophies after all, just more crap for the house clearance people to sort. I should keep something though, I thought. I guess a hunting knife would do. As I reached for the knife, I heard the scuffling of maybe mice from behind the sofa. Actually no, probably rats. It was definitely bigger than mice. I pulled out the dusty beige sofa, knife ready, expecting to see a rat or two dart out into the light. But there were no rats, just a wooden entrance to what looked like a tunnel. It reminded me of the ones you used to see in the World War II escape films. But this one was in the wall, leading to a little hidden room. I knelt down and, ignoring the putrid, damp, stale stench, I scuffled through the tunnel, through to the smaller room, which had a cage at one end. A cage with a body strung up in it, strapped to the wall, gagged but with a thin pipe going into her mouth. She was painfully thin, bruised and still alive but barely conscious. She looked different, but I recognised her straight away. I opened the cage door and knew what I had to do. I pulled out a drinking pipe which was connected to a large water bottle like the ones you get on top of office water coolers, and I ripped off the tape covering her mouth. Katie Waterson, oh God, look at you. You look terrible. Do you remember me? I said. Oh, help me. Help, came the weak reply, each word seeming to take the effort of running a marathon. I mean, do you even remember me, Katie? No, help. Please, help me. And as I silently thanked Dad for everything he'd taught me on that hunting trip, I made one single deep backhanded cut, slicing through her pretty little throat and through her carotid arteries. And with her final gurgling, bloody last breath, Dad's secret became my secret too.
Bloody hell.
Just googled some numbers for counsellors, Tom.
I'm fine.
Wow, that was good, Tom. That was really quite atmospheric, wasn't it?
And well, spooky, good.
Yeah. You know what I always struggle with on stuff like that, where you're trying to put a little twist, like a little... it's hard, isn't it? Where you've got to give clues. You've got to put it all in there.
Yeah.
Because there's no point getting to the end and people going, well, that's bloody ridiculous. How would we even know that was
You don't
what?
Want people to guess.
That wouldn't happen.
Do the mum Dave's mum test. But then you're laying it on too thick and it's like... And then look what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, that was quite chilling, that, Tom.
Good.
That revealed another side of Tom Turner.
Genuinely horrible, that, Tom. In the right kind of way.
That's good. Mm. I think it's quite nice, isn't it? That's a good thing about this podcast, when we're kind of forced into doing a little bits of homework. how you realise you can write something quite short, relatively short, but there's all this backstory, you know, the beauty of writing with all this backstory that's there that everyone can see, but everyone will have a slightly different building blocks of it.
Yeah.
You know, and some people they decide that he accidentally killed his parents because they thought they were burglars or something, or maybe he just killed them because they were annoying, or that's what started it all off. But everyone's got their own different little... And I guess that's probably part of horror, isn't it? Letting people fill in the gaps with their own worst idea.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I think so. I think very, especially with that genre, isn't it?
Yeah, if you spell it out too much.
It's leaving stuff to the imagination.
Yeah. Whereas if it's, you know, if you're leaving the monster, if you like, to be...
unrevealed for as long as possible.
Yeah, their worst nightmare.
Yeah. I think that's often the case with a lot, because a lot of Stephen King movies are really let down by the end. You know, when you actually see the monster or the whatever it is, it's never as scary.
Oh, I quite like clowns, though.
No, it's right. That's where the tension, but it's, the tension but,
you
know, ends there.
When you see it, it's never as scary as you imagined it to be in your head. Like it, I read it, and I remember watching the sort of the original TV series, which I think had something to do with Larry Cohen, Tom.
Did it, our old mate Larry?
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it right up until the end when you actually see the spider monster and it looks crap and it sort of ruins everything that's gone before. And it's like it's so much better when you leave space in someone's imagination for them to create what scares them the most, if you like.
Which is why I think I liked Blair Witch Project so much. We were talking about that the other week. Because literally nothing happens in it at all. You don't see a single thing. It is entirely in your imagination, isn't it? And a lot of it is even the screen is blank, or it's just like, you know, trees being lit up in the dark and sort of shaking around. Yeah. And that's sort of the beauty of it in a way, because you never get to see anything.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because there's nothing as scary in real life. There's nothing as scary as when you're sort of alone in the house at night. When you're a bit younger and you hear little noises and you don't know what they are. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's the things that sort of occur in your imagination are the scariest things that ever happen.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Unless you'd been on holiday with my Uncle Peter.
Well, exactly, yeah. But yeah, very good, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you.
I like that.
I think I quite enjoyed it in the end.
It was good as well because her character came across even before she, you know, gave away the big clues, you know, like the lack of sentimentality and stuff. Yeah. She just sounded a little bit cold.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. I kind of tried to work that through.
You just sort of found her. You know, I wouldn't say that she was unlikable necessarily, because I think whenever something's written from someone's point of view, and I read something sort of on the run-up to this podcast that most good horror is written from a first person rather than third person omniscient, because, you know, you're right there with somebody then. You know, you're seeing and feeling everything that's happening around you. And I think it does work particularly well.
I think I actually did start. But, I did start to write it in the third person, actually.
Oh, right.
And then quickly realised it wasn't really working.
Because you side with the person who's speaking or whose point of view it is quite quickly. Even if they're not massively likable, you're on their side immediately. It's quite a useful little tool.
Yeah,
I would hope. I guess the hope at the end of this little story is that someone goes, "Well, yeah, she did kind of deserve it." Join without having any of the knowledge or anything in there, but
she probably did, didn't she?
Yeah. I hope she gets away with it.
She was a bit mean.
Yeah.
Chapter two
is the awkward house clearing. She's like, "Yeah, I mean, there is a dead body down there. Probably a few more in the garden." Actually, thinking about it.
Brilliant.
Grim. Very grim.
Right. Dave, your turn to scare the pants off of
us. I didn't even come up with a title. I suppose I should have done, shouldn't I? Let's leave it. Untitled. Untitled horror.
Ooh, that's scary.
Mm. I know.
Seems scary. Yeah. Totally mysterious.
On top of the page.
The ghosts have stolen the title.
Okay. It's interesting, like, hearing you talking about the sort of first person. I'm even now thinking, oh, would this have been better in the first person? But it's too late now. Let's just go. Let's go with it. Okay.
I see. Right.
He has no idea how long they've been travelling. Maybe hours. Maybe days, not allowed to sleep, not given the chance to think, all concept of time and space lost on the journey from wherever he was to wherever he is. Stop. Here. The voices are cold, despite the burning heat, jarring like fingernails on slate, yet somehow vaguely familiar. He shields his eyes from the sun, trying to get his bearings, searching for some way out. The sound of the spade clattering to the ground snaps him back to reality. There is no escape. Dig! The word fills him with terror, icy fingers over his sweaty back. He stares at the ground, his mind racing. Why should he? Why give them the satisfaction? Just end it now! But it's not that simple. Even when the end is inevitable, you'll do everything you can to hold it off just a little longer, to squeeze every last drop of time you have left. So he digs. The surface, baked, cracked and crumbling, gives way easily enough, but after a few inches, the going gets harder. The blunt edge of the spade jolts against solid ground, sending shockwaves reverberating up his arms, chattering his teeth. He looks up, imploringly, but the uncaring eyes gazing back offer no respite. Slowly, the hole grows before him, a gaping maw opening wide to consume his very soul. An errant rock snaps the tip of the spade, leaving a serrated edge that glistens in the sunlight, reflecting his thoughts. If he was quick, maybe... A hand grabs the spade from his and casts it aside. That's deep enough. No, not yet, just a little more. He sinks to his knees and begins clawing at the sodden, foul-smelling ground with his bare hands, unthinkable sludge gathering beneath his fingernails. A hand falls on his neck. Enough. Time's up. He hangs his head, resigned to his fate. He lays down, water seeping into his shorts, chilling the small of his back. The first squelching clumps fall onto his legs one at a time, each followed by a sharp intake of panicked breath. Then the rest of the hold is filled in a kicking frenzy, grains of dust swirling in his eyes, heavy buckets landing square on his chest, pushing the air from his lungs until only his head remains unburied, and all the while a horrible, shrill, shrieking noise that sounds like laughter. They're enjoying this. Got you, Daddy! Yes, very funny, kids. Now hurry up, take a picture and get me out of here before the tide comes in. He begins to fidget beneath the sand, hating the feeling of being trapped. Honestly, I don't know why I let you do this to me. Don't worry, Daddy, the youngest replies. This will be the last time. We promise. The camera snaps. The laughter stops, and a bucketful of sand is tipped over his head. Before he can scream, more sand fills his mouth, his ears, his eyes, shrouded in darkness and sealed within his tomb. His final thought, peace at last.
Hey. Hey. Nice.
Very good that day. Yeah.
What a horrible way to go.
Isn't it? Buried by your own children.
Is it the worst? Do you think?
I haven't experienced them all, John, so it's difficult.
It was a popular Victorian horror thing, wasn't it? Being buried alive.
Was it?
To the point where they used to bury people with a bell on the gravestone, yes. with a cord That's going true. Down into the... So when you were buried alive, you could...
ding, ding.
Desperately ring the bell.
I just want some snacks.
I guess that probably speaks of Victorian medical, general.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance you might not actually be dead, but we'll crack on. It's fine. There's a bell if you need anything.
Just close my eyes for a minute.
Yeah, I was only having a nap. Ring, ring, ring.
No,
I was having a nap.
Bury him. But yeah, there we go. Inspired by my time on the beach.
Yeah, it was, isn't it?
Last week, yeah.
We should feel lucky that you returned back.
I only just made it out. But yeah, there you go.
It's good.
Yeah, it was a good, chicaning twist at the end there, where you think, oh, there's a twist. Hold on a minute, we're still going.
The double twist, you see.
Keep your hands inside the ride. We are still moving along.
Yeah, I did. Yet. I did think it was all a dream and he was back on the beach. But no, it was not to be. Just my wishful thinking.
Yep, he's dead. He's properly dead.
He's a goner.
So, John.
Hello.
What are your scares?
So, here we go. This was... It was kind of an idea that I had ages ago, and I thought I could do something with that. So I did. And it goes like this. What big teeth you have, Grandma. I look up from the old book into the gloomy corner of the bedroom, where I can just make out, among a nest of pillows and soft toys, two tiny glints of light, blink, blink, blinking with expectation in the dark. The child must have no light but the reading lamp, Mr. Girdley had said before he left, his eyes never quite connecting with mine. Extreme photosensitivity. His skin will burn, you understand. Jesus, I blurted. Then, sorry, that's awful. So what, he, like, can't go outside or anything? Not in the day, no. And his bones are very brittle. He must not be touched. I was already regretting taking the gig when he said in that tight little voice, I'm most grateful, Elizabeth. I'm so glad I found you online. I'm sorry it's such late notice. I will happily pay you double. Well, okay then, Mr. Nerdy Girdley. Got yourself a deal. He very much enjoys Charles Perrault's fairy tales, he said then, with what I guess was a smile. The boy interrupts my thoughts with his tinny voice. Keep going. All the better to eat you with, I growl suddenly, and the wicked wolf fell upon Red Riding Hood and ate her all up. That is not the ending I remember. I flick to the next page, but there's just a moral to the story, which I almost read, but then can't be asked, and close the book. I look straight into the boy's glistening eyes, trying to make him out, so tempted to turn the light on him. Right, well, good night, Renee. Please don't go, Elizabeth. I pause. I'd like to stay, but your dad said you need sleep. I lie. I hate it when the brats start bargaining. No, he didn't. The boy's tone annoys me, so I say all stern. I'm afraid he gave me strict instructions to leave as soon as I'd finished the story. No, I'm afraid so, I say coldly, leaving the room, unsure why I shudder so violently as I close the door. The kid's bedroom is on the ground floor, opposite a big picture window where black shadows of trees surround the house. Everything in this place smells funny, old and mouldy. I head straight to the kitchen to look for snacks, but as I pass the stairs, I stop. I wouldn't say I'm nosy, but I do like to have a quick sniff around people's houses when I babysit. You know, it's kind of one of the perks, you know? So I head up the stairs and have a little snoop. Nothing much, apart from bedrooms that look like they haven't been touched in decades. Like, he inherited the house and never got round to changing even the bed linen. At the end of the landing, a noise makes me freeze. I swear, I can hear talking. At the end of the hallway, around a corner, is one last door. I open it slowly. Another staircase, leading upwards. The muttering sound is louder, like someone's left a TV on. Slowly, quietly, I start to creep up towards the sound. Then, at the top, in a wave of recognition and sick-making terror, I suddenly realize whose voice I can hear. What big teeth you have, Grandma! It's me. It's my voice. I press my ear to the door where the sound is coming from as my heart tries to make a sudden emergency exit through my chest. All the better to eat you with! But I've realised too late. The door isn't quite clicked shut, so the pressure of my ear has made it swing slowly open, and now my widening eyes are taking in a large attic. On one wall, like a security control room, are banks of monitors, each screen showing a wide-angle view of a room in the house. On one, I'm reading from a fairy tale book. In horror, I watch myself finish reading, then look up, straight into the camera, and say, Right, well, good night, Renee. I sense movement behind me, but before I can turn, I feel a hand clamp over my mouth and an arm around my neck.
Why did you stop there?
What? You can't stop there. What are you doing? What happens now? Oh, bloody hell, John. Oh, that was atmospheric.
I'm just
as well,
expecting
wasn't it?
The names of the people involved in the production to start popping up on screen and for it to continue.
Yeah.
More next week.
Episode one, bloody hell. And then the trees came in.
Oh. Hello, I'm a tree.
Those bloody trees. They do pop up everywhere, them trees, don't they? I do like the tree.
Can you read me a story? That was a bit scary.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what the moral is in Charles Perrault's fairy tale of Red Riding Hood that she doesn't read?
Yes, obviously. We do. Yes. I mean, we can't say no now you've asked that question,
no.
Can we?
No, you can't.
That would be awkward.
No,
though,
please
it?
Tell us, John.
It is moral. Children, especially attractive, well-bred young ladies, should never talk to strangers, for if they should do so, they may well provide dinner for a wolf. I say wolf. But there are various kinds of wolves. There are also those who are charming, quiet, polite, unassuming, complacent and sweet, who pursue young women at home and in the streets. And unfortunately, it is these gentle wolves who are the most dangerous ones of all.
There you go.
She should have read it, you see. That's the thing, yeah. in horror things, they always make a little mistake, don't they? That's the thing, that's the moment where you're like
the
screaming at the screen.
Of their own downfall,
yeah,
aren't they?
That's it. They always make a little mistake.
Yeah.
Their little character flaw leads them into danger.
Well, look at that. We've all written some horror.
So, out of 10, how much did you enjoy it?
A little bit.
Wow.
I enjoyed it a bit,
I mean,
but
that's
not as
great.
Out of 10,
was that, is
I
that like
maybe
a 4?
6 or a 7. I didn't really feel like I sort of connected with it. When we did the sort of thriller thing, it felt like I was writing the first chapter of something that could carry on. Whereas that, it always felt like I was writing, like yours, you know, it's going somewhere. That very much felt like a little tiny story all of itself, which is a nice exercise, but I didn't really, you know, didn't get my juices going.
What about you, Tommy?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I quite like the short story thing. It's nice. You're kind of doing the writing and the editing and the shifting around all in one place, and it's all very manageable.
Yeah.
Like in mine, the paragraphs moved around an awful lot towards the end when I was editing.
Yeah.
And it's fine because it doesn't trip anything else up. But I quite enjoyed it, really. Considering I didn't, I haven't got a eye for horror. It's not a thing. It's not a genre I particularly watch or read or anything.
Well, you did it with aplomb, considering.
I definitely thought there was aplomb in there. Really good.
Great big fat plomb.
Great big plomb.
Enjoyed it.
You saying that, Tom, I did a bit more of that as well than normal, sort of jiggering things around, and I spent a bit more time than normal sort of tweaking the language as well to sort of fit the sort of horror genre. So I think there was that.
Well, then it was a good exercise, wasn't it, in the truest
it
sense
was a
of
good
the
exercise. Yes. Mm-hmm. John, what was? Oh, hang on. You didn't give a number score.
Oh yeah,
Tom.
The 7. Give it a solid 7.
Well, hang on a minute. Wait a minute. We need to talk about numbers, because you've said you sort of enjoyed it and gave it 7. I said I didn't really enjoy it and said I'd give it a 6 or a 7. So how does the scale work?
No, 7's pretty good, isn't it? You got to leave. You don't want to. You need room for improvement, always. Do you know what I mean?
I'll go down to a 5.
I think you're talking about a 5 there, mate. It's not my numbers.
That sounds really. That sounds really bad.
Well, that's literally what you just said before you said the number.
Yeah, I was guessing at a 4. I think.
Oh, God,
3 maybe.
I don't know how arbitrary number systems work.
Well, you like writing, right? So it's never going to be that low.
I prefer writing to answering this question.
So answering this question is probably a 2 then, isn't it?
Yeah, well, maybe a 1. Oh, I don't know.
It's not a 1 though, is it, Dave? It's not the worst question in the world.
give me a week. I'll come back to you.
God, you're rubbish at arbitrary number scales.
I really am. I've always
Maybe it depends where the scale starts, doesn't it?
I don't know. I just imagine Dave going to A&E, you know, when they say, how much does it hurt on a scale of 1 to 10?
Exactly. And he's like, I've always been fearful of that question. I hope I'm never in a situation where a doctor says, how's the pain on a scale of 1 to 10? Because I'd be there for hours. I don't know.
I can imagine you just looking the doc in the eye going, 2? And he's going, what? You've lost most of your hand. 3? 4?
I don't know.
5?
What's a 10?
5?
God.
If you say 8, you get some drugs. 8!
Yeah.
So, yeah. What about you, John? What's your made up
number? I'd go pretty high. See, I'm thinking the scale starts at 1, but we have to assume that we all like writing, right? So this is within the scale of enjoyment generally, but the 1 is like the
one
least
is like
amount.
If we say, right, next week's task, without using copy and paste, is to write 10,000 words, and every word is the.
Yeah, that would be right down the bottom of the scale, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, David could get a 4 or 5 probably, but it's a 1, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
Good thing. But yeah, I think I'd give that a 9. I think I found my genre. I love it. Oh. I mean, I'm not saying it's good, but I still I did enjoy it. It came out very quickly, which I suppose is a good thing.
Yeah. No, it was very good.
Well, there you go.
There we go. That's
smashed
horror.
That one, didn't we, kids?
We've done. We've completed horror.
That's it. We're brilliant. We are brilliant. Failing writers. What an ironic title, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey? Yeah.
Join us next week on the previously known as the Failing Writers podcast, where Dave is going to give a fantastic, fantastic review of the book he's read. What was the book again, Dave?
Oh, hang on. I put it down somewhere now. It's called The Hidden Tools of Comedy by Steve Kaplan.
And, yep, so Dave will give a review of that. And, God, are you going to have to give it a rating out of 10? Because...
No.
How's that going to go?
Oh, God.
I thought it was probably one of the best books I've ever read. 3 out of 10.
Yeah, maybe I need to devise a new
system. One of these you're one of these people that leaves the reviews on Amazon that are like, yeah. You're looking for best. This is the best product I've ever had. It really does the job well. Fantastic price. 2 out of 5 stars.
I can't give reviews.
No, I think we've covered in previous episodes, Dave, and reviews.
Yeah.
It's probably not something that anyone wants
not
to revisit.
My thing. I should leave that alone. Yeah, I should definitely leave it alone. But if you're good at reviews, listeners, why not review this show? That was a good segue, wasn't it?
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Say some few nice words about how delightful, how charming and funny I am. And mention Dave and John as well. And it all helps.
It does. Mainly it just warms our cockles. Yeah.
It does, doesn't it?
I've
really?
Got pretty cold cockles, so any warmth would be good. But yeah, this probably is a good moment to talk about upcoming things, isn't it? Because this week... we're doing our live show this Thursday at the Ilkley Manor House.
That's it. Ilkley
Isn't
Manor
it?
House Courtyard.
The courtyard.
6:30 p.m. Get yourself down there. It's free. You can book. It's always good to book just in case it gets rammed. You might get turned away, but you can just turn up.
Find all the details on our website at failingwriterspodcast.com/blog.
Yeah, and be there to be part of writing the greatest story written ever
in the history of the world.
It's going to be fun anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. It is going to be fun. And you might even get a free bookmark.
What?
Yeah. Big time. Hello.
But it was fun. We did an interview, didn't we? It was just on the radio.
Yeah. We did. Yeah. We could play out with that because I recorded it.
Did you? Oh,
if people want to hear it.
Let's do that then.
Yeah.
Gail Lofthouse.
Now, my next guests, I feel, are really doing themselves down because they are funny, they are talented, they are all excellent voiceover artists as well, yet they present something called the Failing Writers Podcast. And not only that, they're bringing a live version of the podcast to the Ilkley Literature Festival Fringe next Thursday. Before we speak to them, this is just a tiny little flavour, which I hope they won't mind me playing. Recently, one of them inadvertently came up with a questionable, interesting catchphrase, and in a later episode, it was highlighted through a jolly little ditty, which I particularly enjoyed. I hope you will too.
So Dave's catchphrase...
Oh, did you like it?
Well, how do I put this? We all love a catchphrase. A good old-fashioned catchphrase. A funny little calling card that everyone holds dear. A few little words we all want to hear. Who couldn't love Bart Simpson's Eat My Shots, Man? Or the Chuckle Brothers? To me, to you, we are a fan. And if you're old enough, you'll know Steptoe was indeed a dirty old man. Mr. Humphreys, from Are You Being Served, was always free. And you'd always get a nice to see you nice from old Brucey. But when they heard Dave's catchphrase, I'm afraid the feedback was not all that. Victor Meldrew doesn't believe it. Baldrick has no cunning plan. And Arnie most certainly won't be back. Such wonderful phrases. You'd say I'd never tire of hearing that. So what a shame Dave chose. How do you like it? Because, well, it's just a little bit...
rubbish. I had to change the end. It had a small swear on it. Welcome to the show, Dave Baird, John Rand and Tom Turner. Hello!
Hello.
How do you like it? I very much enjoyed the catchphrase. Thank you so much for coming on. You're all in different places, I should point out. You're not all sat together at the moment. So I might have to direct my questions accordingly. But first of all, you're not failing writers. How are you failing writers? Dave, how are you a failing writer?
Well, because all of the things that I write, no one ever reads them. So I guess that's kind of the definition of a failing writer, isn't it? I mean,
no, I don't believe this whole show.
We keep on having a go. But that's kind of what it's all about, is trying to inspire each other to keep going, despite the fact that, well, no one ever reads it. No one ever sees the words.
Oh, so, I mean, John, is the point of the podcast then to help each other, help listeners who are interested in writing as well? Are you trying to get better at writing?
That is exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. We started it. It was actually Tommy's idea, was to start a podcast that would sort of almost like a little self-help group to encourage and shame each other into doing a bit more writing and, you know, sharing our ideas and being sat at home during, you know, the height of all the coronavirus stuff and having professional voiceover studios. It seemed a bit daft not to do something. So that's kind of, yeah, exactly how it started.
Well, you, I think it's, like it, you say, you might be failing.
It did start to help. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, you might be failing writers, but you're all voiceovers, aren't you?
We are. Yeah, we are. That is what we do day to day. And, you know, in theory, that should give you the time to do plenty of writing. But somehow, things just always get in the way. Do you know what I mean? There's always the washing to put on. There are snacks to be eaten.
Yeah.
You know, the kettle's always crying out to be put on. I don't know. There's always a reason not to write, I think.
Oh. But, well, bless you.
But yeah, that's the idea.
It's a lovely podcast. Tom, are you working on something at the moment then? Do you all set each other little writing challenges? And if so, how's yours going this week?
Well, yeah, this week we're just about to record our episode that includes our short horror story. We interviewed a horror writer the other week, so we thought we'd give ourselves that task. And, I've actually finished. I don't know if the boys have finished theirs yet. We're going to record it in about 20 minutes, so I hope they have.
Just finishing mine now, actually, Tommy.
And what response are you getting, you know, from listeners? How are they enjoying it, Dave?
I think a couple of people are enjoying it. Yeah. I mean, you seem to like it, Gail, and
I loved
John's
it.
Mum's a fan. We have some listeners. We have, saying a few hundred would be over-egging it slightly, but the feedback we get is generally positive from those who do hear it, I think.
Oh, well, it must be doing all right, because you're actually you're doing a kind of live version of the podcast at the Ilkley Literature Festival Fringe. John, do you want to tell us, how is that actually going to pan out? How is it going to appear to us?
Well, that is an excellent question.
Yeah, John.
I'm not entirely sure. But we're going to attempt to write the greatest story in the history of the world ever. That's how we're billing it. Because I figure that if two heads are better than one, then, you know, between us, we've got three heads last time I counted. So, you know, we've got three heads plus all the heads in the audience that we'll be asking for suggestions from. So, you know, I can't actually see how we could fail. End up with something, you know, incredible. I mean, you'd think that we might have practiced this, wouldn't you? That maybe we'd done some dry runs, you know, just to check it's possible. And, you know, maybe some more just to hone the craft of improvising a story.
Oh my gosh.
In a very short amount of time. But no, we haven't. So
I'm worried for you. Only because the thing about writing is that, you know, inevitably you have great days where it just flows, it just comes out of you, and it's wonderful and it's exhilarating. But then you have those days where you have the block, and what happens if you sit there with a blank piece of paper in front of you, and the audience look at you and go, well, we don't have any ideas. What are you going to do then?
Well, Gail, we have a box of stimuli, which we will be reaching for. If all three of us get writer's block simultaneously, that's what we'll be doing. We'll be reaching for the magical stimuli box.
Oh, wow.
So, and yeah.
Is it as well? Tom, is it weather dependent in any way, or the fact that you're doing it in a tent, is that, well, you can do it in all weathers?
No, I mean, obviously we're praying for floods and thunder, lightning, and some of the worst weather Ilkley has ever seen, so it has to get cancelled. But, yeah, we'll carry on regardless and do a bang average job, I would imagine.
Oh, you're really selling this, guys. I have to say, I think that is that's the whole ethos, though, of the Failing Writers podcast, isn't it? It's not arrogant in any way. It's not smug in any way. It's not we're doing this better than anybody else. And you did a lovely interview with, I think the most recent one I heard was with Dr. Kate Fox, who she's a poet by all accounts. So you do. It's writing in all its forms. Is that right, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a poet on, we've had a horror writer on, a thriller writer, a sort of comedy sort of man. So, anyone who's interested in
a comedian,
in any sort
Dave.
Of writing.
They're called comedians.
Well, I'm famed for my words, which is what this whole thing's based on. But the comedy man, he was funny. No, we have all sorts of guests, and it really is just for anyone who's ever thought about writing anything but never quite got round to it. And the whole thing it is difficult to get into writing in many ways. And they do say that having a sort of a hard deadline and a bit of stress and pressure is the best way to get your best work out. So that's what we've done. We've gone for the ultimate in deadlines and pressure. We've got to write the whole thing in 40 minutes, you see? So, what could go wrong?
Well, exactly. I mean, where exactly is it, if people want to get their tickets sorted and come along, where can they find you next Thursday?
Well, the event is at Ilkley Manor House Courtyard, which is in Ilkley, obviously. It is a free event, but it's good if you could sort of book in advance. It helps them get an idea of numbers. And all the details are on our website, which is failingwriterspodcast.com/blog. The details are there.
Wonderful, wonderful. So eventually, if you all get, I don't know, book deals, TV deals, film deals,
yep.
I mean, would the podcast have to stop, or, you know, what's the future plan, John? You know, when it all works, what's the plan?
Well, hopefully, yeah, this will end fairly quickly. That is the point we're trying to get to end this thing. That is no, I don't know. Do you know what? It has been genuinely joyful to do this, and especially, you know, in these particular times. It's just been a lovely thing to do, and it has, I think, to begin with as well, I think it actually worked. It actually helped us do a bit more writing.
Yeah.
The irony in a way is that over time, the podcast has taken up more time and energy and has probably eaten into our writing time, but you know, can't have everything. So, but yeah, we've genuinely been enjoying the process and learning a lot too. And hopefully the people who've listened have learned a lot too about writing, about creativity. And we've learned a lot about interviewing people as well, which, you know, it isn't necessarily a natural skill, is it? But it's something you have to get good at over time. Well, but yeah, it's been fabulous. Really great.
It is fabulous. It's really good. And I think, you know, fundamentally, the thing about writing is, yeah, it's great if you can sell things and it's great if you can make that your living and make money out of it. But for most people, it genuinely is just a joy and a pleasure. And over the last year or so on this show, we'd been encouraging people to send in their short stories. I mean, I say short stories, it's technically flash fiction because they were under 750 words. But the range of stories we have had, the styles, the genres, it has been absolutely unbelievable. The standard has been incredible as well. So I think if anybody has an urge to write, then they should definitely check out your podcast. How and indeed where can they do that, Tom?
We are on all your favorite podcast platforms, so just search for The Failing Writers and we will pop up. Subscribe, like it, send us a review if you like it. If you don't like it, don't review it. And have a listen, yeah, get involved.
Exactly. If you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything, at, all.
Anything at all.
That's what I was always told. Exactly. It's so lovely to catch up with you. Lots and lots of luck with the Ilkley Literature Festival Fringe next Thursday. I hope that people will come and see you. I hope you create something wonderful. Although creating a potential copyright sort of nightmare for you if suddenly like 40 people are involved in a story. Imagine having to split up the royalties there or whatever it is. But lots of luck with the Failing Writers podcast as well. I've been talking to Dave Baird, John Rand and Tom Turner. Thank you so much, chaps. Lovely to talk to you. You take care. Thank you.
I panicked and I just put some pâté on some crisp breads.
That's your panic response. Oh my God, I don't know what to do. I just put some pâté on these.
What are you doing, Tom? He's dying. Get the pâté!
All right,
right
then.
Okay, for now. Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Cool. Lovely. Lovely hanging out again. Bye-bye.
Just stop with the long endings.
That was a really weird
too long.
Ending. Let's do that again. It was too long and too weird.
Yeah,
it ended about reading. 5 minutes ago.
It cut all that out. Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?